It's the HMB sides. Extra exclusive content available only on HMBRadio.com. My guest is Eileen Coleman. I should have mentioned that we were going to be doing extra time, but we kind of came up against the ending of the recording, and I forgot to do so. But welcome back, man. I like to start it out with a curse word. What's your favorite curse word?
Shit.
Shit. That's a good one. That's old reliable. You can do a lot with shit, too. You can kind of, you can add another one to it. Shithead. I've been saying lately a lot. I like that. It's such a, I always find that the simpler the insult, the more effective it can be. So just calling someone a shithead can do a lot of damage.
I agree.
That's how, I think that's how I'm going to start these off. Favorite curse words. So shit for Eileen Coleman. I'm thinking about mine. There's so many that are good.
My dad is a connoisseur of cuss words.
Yes.
And he has them all down pat.
He's been working. He's got a long time to practice.
Throughout the years, he is Mr. Beep.
So tell me about, we were talking about sports. I know you played basketball in school and college. What the hell's going on in the NBA?
The Stephen Curry storm. Oh man, he's a phenomenal.
He's a freak.
It's been a long time since, someone has made me rise from my seat and say, well, goddamn.
Yeah.
You know, we have never seen that before. And he is, you know, the joy for the game. You can see that that team plays with it. And it's refreshing because, you know, the NBA is a business and all of the moves that gets made and, you know, all of the pampered millionaires and all of that, that whole vibe. You know, it's refreshing to see their team, the way they play for each other and the joy for the game. You can tell. They're playing for the joy and not for the dollars.
It seems like he's kind of changed the atmosphere of the league because it was the LeBron show for so many years. I mean, for 10 years now. LeBron's a great player, don't get me wrong. But this is a guy who's, 6'1" maybe? He's just a pure shooter, ball handler, and he doesn't have the flash that LeBron has.
You know, his we were talking about this, and I never shared this with you, but we actually do. Well, a friend of mine actually does a podcast called Sofa Hoops.
Oh yeah,
And it's out there on YouTube. And so we found ourselves. We talk every day about basketball and about how the league's going. Different things and all of the shows that we would watch, seemed as if they were going off some type of narrative, right? Where, because the whole thing with LeBron and they were like, oh, the best player on the planet. And then when he said the best player on the planet, then all of a sudden all of the sportcasters were saying, oh, best player on the planet. I was like, wait a minute. Were they told to say this? Are they going off some type of narrative? So, you know, we started talking about this every day, and it was like the barbershop talk, the real stuff that real fans talk about. And so we were like, oh, he needs to capture that. So we started doing that, and we started getting some nice feedback from it, but it was refreshing because it was something that I really didn't have to go and do a lot of research on because I did that and played basketball all my life. So I could look at things and touch emotion and actually speak as if we were in the barbershop. So, you know, the average fan that knows basketball will know where we're coming from. So it's the voice of the people per se.
Yeah. I think that with LeBron, I remember I was still in high school. He graduated in 2003 as well. So we're the same age. But that was the narrative. Like he is Jordan 2, right? I mean, he's the guy, he's a second coming and he's a fantastic player. But then when you have somebody like Stephen Curry, like I said, who's seems like he's more of a man of the people more than LeBron is.
Yeah, because LeBron is – when you look at LeBron and let's say if you were a 5'9 white guy from Wisconsin, I mean, could you really relate to LeBron? Because he's a freak of nature.
Right.
You know, he's 6'9", built like a
chiseled
– yeah, run the floor like crazy – you know, jump out of the gym, all that athleticism. But LeBron is great at a lot of, he's good at a lot of things, but he's great at nothing, really. You know what I mean?
Right.
Whereas Stephen Curry, the average guy, I mean, literally, you could walk by Stephen Curry on the street and be like,
he's nothing special.
Yeah. You know, so I always go back. Remember the Dream Team? Mm-hmm. And they did that documentary.
Was that 92?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there was one part in that when John Stockton got off the bus. And he walked down the street with his family, and no one knew who he was. And Karl Malone said, I would give anything to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, these people didn't know who John Stockton was because he looked like the average guy
walking down the street.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the same thing with Stephen Curry. He is this baby-faced kid who is not particularly athletic, but his skill set is something. You can tell they worked on it. You can tell he puts in the work. And he's reaping the rewards, and the average guy who's not built like a freight train, who can't jump out of the gym, can say, oh, I can do that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I could strive to do that if I work. You know what I mean? So
yeah, totally.
That's what's amazing about, you know, some of the things, his relatability to the rest of the world. So it's amazing. It's an amazing time. And I think the league, you know, looking at it from the business side of it, okay, LeBron's kind of fading out now. We need a new face. And it just so happens that he has all of these skill sets. He's been reared up in our league culture. It's perfect for them.
Yeah, perfect. It's kind of win-win for everyone. Is LeBron fading out, though?
Yes.
Meaning he's, by fading, you mean he's just getting old? Or
no, I mean, I think that, a couple things are happening, and I think that the average consumer, or should I say basketball fan, is kind of seeing the writing on the wall because, you know, once he left Miami and he went back home and, you know, the whole big rah-rah thing was happening, and then you start to hear the little cracks about him trying to get Spoelstra fired, him getting Mike Brown fired, now Black got fired. And it's like, you know, it was amazing that when Black got fired, they came out right away and said LeBron had nothing to do with it. And it's like, wait a minute, that's a guilty thing, you know, if I ever had to see one, you know. So we immediately thought, there's no way that you guys made a move like that without LeBron knowing, so we know that's false.
Mm.
But then now he has rumblings going on where guys don't want to be there. He's ousting Kevin Love. You know, all of these little things. And then on top of that, you got this team who was put together with a bunch of we don't knows. And what I mean by that is there was not one player on that team, in that, you know, Warriors team, who was a big-name player. Because remember, Steph, when he came out of Davidson, and he was at Davidson, you know, and there was questions about would he be able to play in the league, what would he be able to do in the league, and then he had those ankle issues. So he's a max contract player now, but at the time, they weren't thinking
he wasn't a sure thing.
Yeah, so, yeah. And then you got Klay Thompson on, you know, Draymond Green, all of these guys, Iggy, you know, Iguodala, was a second, third time, you know, player on the Sixers. So you have all of these not ready for, quote, not ready for primetime players on one team, and they're playing with this passion that's just infectious, and they're winning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so it's like it's done by committee.
So Curry didn't have the hype coming out of school. There was a lot of uncertainties with him, and I think maybe that was even overblown, his skill set, I guess, maybe. And so he came in, he was under the radar, and boom, all of a sudden he's a superstar. And I think that had a lot to do with LeBron was on the cover of Slam magazine in 2003 as a senior.
Yeah.
You know, so there was maybe not as many expectations for him.
Yeah, you know, when people hear us talk sometimes, I think, you know, they may be thinking that we're LeBron haters when we're not. Because LeBron is I give him tremendous credit because the scrutiny that he's always under, right, is more than any other athlete I've ever seen in my whole life, including Jordan, right? And here's this kid coming out to all of these great expectations. Remember, he signed a $90 million Nike deal before he even played a game.
Right.
So all of these expectations that this kid had to live up to, and somehow, some way, he's found a way to live up to it, right? But when you start breaking down just basketball, there's things that he does that are, like I said, he does a lot of good things. Like, he's a good passer.
He's talking
athletic.
About LeBron now?
Yeah, LeBron. Mm-hmm. He does all of these. He does a lot of good things. But there's not one great thing. Like, he doesn't have a great pro post game. He doesn't really move too well without the basketball. He needs the basketball to be, you know, effective. And just, you know, he doesn't shoot the ball particularly well from the outside. You know what I mean? So there's a lot of things that you can see in his game. But in the beginning, you know, because he was force-fed to you and he was doing some amazing things, you kind of overlooked that. Right. And then when, you know, it started to tweak a little bit when he went down to Miami, because it was like, okay, the you know, guys from the past would say, well, how are you the league MVP and you leave home to go play with somebody who's already won, right? Because Dwayne Wade had already won a mm-hmm. championship in Miami.
Him and Shaq, right?
Yeah, he didn't leave Miami to go play with you in Cleveland. You left Cleveland as the MVP to go down there, and that started a lot of controversy with him. The one things we talk about was, you know, remember Donaghy, the ref?
Yeah, the guy that was
yeah,
with the mob.
Yeah. Yes. He called out a lot of truths about some things, and I know some of that stuff that he was talking about, it wasn't all false. And he wasn't, I think he was the fall guy, you know, but,
Yeah, you're telling me that this is the only guy involved in that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he was definitely the guy who just got, was the guy.
So, but some of the things he was saying, if you go back and look, like in their first championship, right? Cause remember they lost to Dallas that first year. And then, that next year, going through the playoffs that year, they went through, let's see who they played. They played the Knicks. Then they played, I know they played the Pacers. They played, Boston. And then they wind up playing, OKC. So when you look at it, right? So, and then look who LeBron is checking. LeBron is guarding guys who, one, create contact, and that spends a lot of time at the line, right? But how is he consistently guarding those guys and not getting his first foul until the third quarter?
Right.
So we were like, I was a little skeptical, because you're talking about having to guard Carmelo Anthony, Paul Pierce, Paul George, Kevin Durant.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way that you could tell me you're consistently coming out of the game, you know, with your first foul in the third quarter. And you're finishing the foul, you know, the game with three fouls, whatever the case may be. But, you know, and then if any one of those guys had a good game, and this is on tape, you can go back and look at the game. If any one of those guys had a good game, that very next game, they caught two early fouls, boop, boop, and had to go sit down.
Mm.
They did it to Paul Pierce. They did it. The only person that did it didn't happen to was Carmelo Anthony, because they were going to beat them anyway.
Right.
You know, but all of the challenges, when they were playing the Pacers, and they played the Pacers, they played OKC, and then they played Boston, those guys caught early foul trouble. So it was kind of like, you know, all right, enough is enough now. I'm tired of the, you know.
I think that the league probably invested a lot in him, knowing that it was going to bring a lot of money to them. So they have to protect their investment, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
I
yeah.
And he's got to be he's the freak that comes through, you know, once every century, you know, and so it's certainly suspicious.
That is the business of basketball, we call it, right? So, you know, those are the things that you know, certain things get overlooked, you know, with certain star players. And I'm pretty sure it happened with Jordan and all of those guys, but the one thing about those guys was those guys played more for where the championship actually meant something, where the love of the game was on there, you know, and they truly competed. And, you know, that's why you kind of hear now, you hear some of the old guys, you know, it seems like they're hating on Steph Curry, you know, like some of the all-time greats like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Oscar Robertson said some things. But what they said was not really demeaning to Steph. The media took it and swindled it that way. That's not what they were saying. What they were saying was, if guys really knew basketball, with all the amazing things that Steph Curry is doing, if a guy can shoot the ball from that deep, they're like, I got to play better defense on. I got to go catch him at the half court mark as opposed to dropping back and letting him come to me at the 3-point line because you're too late. So that's what Oscar Robertson really was saying. He wasn't saying Steph couldn't play at this time. He wasn't saying any of that. What he said was, you guys don't know basketball in regards to letting this guy come down with no one guarding him and trying to pick him up at the 3-point line. You're too late. He's shooting the ball way too well, right? So they're not adjusting, is basically what he said. They're not adjusting to his style of play to be able to, to make it a little tougher on him.
Right. So it's new. He plays the game in a new way. Exactly. He can shoot, like you said, from the half court.
There's been nobody ever in the league who's done that. Mm-hmm. Right. So, but what they're saying is, what he was saying is like, there's a few things that's, that's been taken out of the game now, like the hand check. Like, see, I think, me personally, being able, coming from that era and watching that era of basketball, those guys, if you can score the basketball with someone consistently holding you, forearm on you, hand checking you, you have some real skill, because that's a tough thing to do, right? Now they let them carry a little bit more with the basketball. You couldn't do that back then, you know what I mean? So those are just some little differences, and it depends on whatever you grew up in. If you grew up in that time, then you're used to that basketball, and you're like, oh, okay, you have to be more macho and tough. And then if you're like, well, if I grew up in this era, I like the non-hand check, the flow of the game better, the up and down move. It just depends on whatever you come from.
Let me ask you the hacky question that everybody asks.
Yeah.
LeBron and Jordan one-on-one, who do you think would win?
I'm going with Mike.
I'm going LeBron.
I'm going Mike.
Yeah. Not only do I think that LeBron would win, I think LeBron would win handedly.
Really?
Yes. Here's why. Because going back to what we were just talking about, human beings are evolving. They're stronger. They're faster. These guys, look back in the 80s at some of the guys that were playing. They look like guys. Now they're freaks. They're genetic freaks. They're all cut and muscular. So I think LeBron would take it to Jordan.
Here's why I don't think that. I think it would be a good game just because of LeBron's sheer girth. But Mike was a scientist, and basketball is a game of angles. And I think that Michael has more of an arsenal offensively than LeBron does. And LeBron doesn't have a real back-to-the-basket game. He's not going to turn and because Michael is not going to let you get to certain spots on the floor, right? And he's not going to go in there and dunk on Michael. It's just not going to happen, because when you're out there and if I throw you the basketball at the key, you're going to go either right or left or shoot the jumper. Now, he's probably going to back up and let LeBron shoot a jumper. Right? And if LeBron doesn't shoot it particularly well, Michael can shoot threes. He's not a Steph Curry, but he shoots threes better than LeBron does. But I think that when I used to see Kobe play against LeBron, when Kobe had his legs and everything, I saw how LeBron struggled guarding Kobe. And I'm thinking, if you couldn't guard Kobe, whoa, you would have a tough time with Michael. You would have a very tough time with Michael. But, one-on-one is that's always a tough call because it's not the game either.
Yeah, I mean, that's not how the game is played, one-on-one.
It would be good, though. It would be good. Like, I don't want to count LeBron out. I don't want to seem like, LeBron doesn't have any skills. I mean, LeBron is an amazing athlete, And the one thing that they did say, which I agree with, is that he never cheated fans. When you go out to see him play, he played. It's just very recently that he started resting games and taking games off, but he's been in the league 13 years already.
Yeah, I know. That's crazy.
That's amazing. And he's, if I was a fan and I paid my ticket, I'm coming through the doors to see LeBron. And he's never, you know, disappointed a fan by not playing, you know? So
I mean, he can play, what, 10 yeah. more years?
Yeah. Yeah, at least five. At least five. Because I think, you know, as your body starts to break down some from injury, the one thing he's been really, really lucky with is that he hasn't suffered any injury, which is amazing, especially with his girth and the way he gets up and down and, you know.
Because he's a freak, dude. Yeah, he's a genetic freak.
So, I'm not wishing harm on him, but the one thing that I see could hinder him right now is if he suffered some type of injury, would his skill sets allow him to be just as effective in a ground game?
Right.
As
right.
opposed to being able to jump over people and, you know what I mean?
Yes.
And that's when the true science of the game comes out. Cause, you know, if you watch Kobe and you watch Michael, they used to be able to fly as well too, but somewhere along the line, they got to their ground game to kind of say, okay, look, I need to have something I could go to when I can't fly. When I, you know, when I need a bucket, I need to have a go-to move or a place on the floor that I can consistently be effective on. So, you know, if he had that, you'd be probably talking about the greatest player ever.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no way that you could stop him. There's no way that if LeBron was going to the basket and he was – the one thing about him when he plays, I think they should, he should have more movement. Because if LeBron is cutting, LeBron is on the move, it's very hard to guard him. How do you, he's so quick, he's so big. Your center could not meet him at the rim. There's no way. He's too big.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he would live at the free throw line. And justifiably so. Because there's nothing you could do with that man cutting to the basket. With his girth, with his athleticism, with his, you know, sheer power. You know, there'd be no way to contain him. But when he stands on the perimeter and becomes a perimeter player, a perimeter jump shooter, I think he lets the defense off.
Do you still play anymore at all, even for fun?
Yeah, I took some time off. And I go on these hiatuses where I go 6 months, 8 months without playing. I just recently started playing again. Just because I needed the cardio and my tire around my stomach was getting too big. And, you know, I got a history of diabetes in my family. So I was like, you know what? You need to get up off the couch, dude, and do something. So, mm-hmm. I go out there now. The main thing is I like to compete, but the main thing is for cardio and the camaraderie with the guys. I really, really miss that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was never good enough to play, but I used to spend my summers when actually kids used to go outside and shoot around and play, you know, with my buddies and stuff like that. And then I wanted to play in high school. I was just way too fat. I couldn't do anything. And our team was actually pretty good too. So, I remember my buddy plays, like, come out to a practice, you know, maybe yeah. you can, you know, I was happy. I just wanted a jersey, really. I didn't even care if I played. But I went down not too long ago to USF down here, and I had a couple guys. You wanna? And I was like, nah, I'm good. I'm good, man. And they're like, oh, come on. And I was like, all right. You guys gotta take it easy on me though, man. And they wiped the floor with me. It wasn't even close. And I was like, I thought you guys were taking it easy on me. We are taking it easy on you.
Wow.
It was embarrassing.
Yeah, I mean. Some of the things that these guys can do today is really incredible. I'll give you a stat. So, at my school that I went to college, wound up going to a small Division II school, called Mercy College up in Dobbs Ferry.
That's New York?
Yeah. And, originally I was supposed to go to University of Hartford, play there. And then I had also a situation where I was being recruited by the University of Florida, so I was going to be a Gator.
Mm-hmm.
It never materialized. There's a whole funny story behind that, but so I wound up going to Mercy College, and I didn't really put my all into it. I was kind of frustrated with basketball, but I went on a scholarship anyway, and we hung out and just kind of it was a free for all. But it was almost like. We went to party and just basketball was like a pastime, you know, that we had to do in order to stay into the party school. But, I went on and looked. Someone told me, some time ago to go and look at the all-time stats. And I'm still the all-time steals leader. And I am the only player in school's history that's in the top four of every category.
Really?
Yeah. So I thought that was really, really cool. So I'm, you know, I was like, wow, maybe they'll retire my jersey one day.
Yeah, there you go.
So that would be a cool thing to kind of tell my kids and stuff like that. So it's cool to be able to share those things.
Definitely. Do you have, how old are your kids?
I have a 20-year-old. I have a 18-year-old. She'll be 18 in a few days. And then I have a 15-year-old.
Wow.
Yeah.
Are you that old? How old are you?
I am 46.
Damn, you are that old. I thought you were like in your late 30s.
Wow, thank you. I appreciate it, man. That oil of Olay be working.
Did they get into sports at all?
My daughter played for her high school. And, you know, she went out there. I was very proud of her for getting out there to do it. But what I didn't want was them to be compared to their dad. You know, mm-hmm. I didn't want them to say, oh, well, dad did this and I got to do this to please him or anything like that. So I really didn't push them. You know, whatever they wanted to do, I'd get behind them. It just so happened she played basketball for her high school. And, you know, at one point, I may have gotten a little bit too when I was like, do you know you can go to school if you got good at this, you know? Yeah. I don't think it was to that level for her. It was more like a club thing, which is fine. But I was very proud of her for trying, mm-hmm. you know? And my oldest one is more... She was always more prissy, more girly. And my son is just like, dad, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like, he'll go out there now and play with his friends at, you know, at the local court or something like that. But, he's not, you know, I'm going to do the team thing, you know. He must have thought that he would get the skills by osmosis or something like that because he, you know, he hopped up one day and he goes, hey, I'm going to try out for the basketball team. And I was like, huh? I was like, but you don't play. Like, you know, did you think you would just get it in a day? Because yeah. He was like, oh, dad, could you take me out to show me some stuff? And I was like, wow, I've been waiting all night to be able to share what I know with my son. And so I took him out there one day and worked him out a little bit. And he was like, it must have been too much for him because he never asked me again. But I realized that it was the day before the tryout. And he probably thought, okay, dad worked me out today. I'll make the team tomorrow and then everything will be good. But
it's signing that contract in 4 years.
Yeah. Yeah. So I told him, it doesn't work like that, son. You have to get out there and play and, you know, and it's a basketball is a repetitive thing, you know,
mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I watched this documentary not too long ago. I forget the title of it, but it was parents who are really involved in their kids. Yeah. It was mortifying. I felt so bad for these kids.
Yeah. That's one reason why I never coached. Well, I won't coach anything past like the fifth grade or anything like that, you know what I mean? Because the game, the innocence of the game is something. You know, and that's
what's well, supposed
it's
to be
joyous.
Fun,
yeah,
right?
And that's
I mean,
when it's joyous. But when you start getting into, I'm the best. My kid is the best. My kid needs to be playing more. My kid needs to shoot more. And then it's like, well, no, it's more about the parents and not about the child. And the joy of the game is now lost because the parent is trying to live vicariously between, you know, for that child or through that child. And the child is no longer having fun.
Right. And that's what it's supposed to be, number one. I'm trying to find this clip because just the way they talk to these little... There was a guy who is trying to turn his daughter into Tiger Woods, pretty much. And he's like, the girl's a little girl. She's 8 years old or something like that. And he's cursing at her,
wow.
You know, threatening to beat her. I was trying to find the clip.
Yeah.
Let me see if this works.
That's crazy.
So this is the trailer.
Every parent wants their kid to be a superstar. Get the kid to buy into your dreams.
With his talent,
get the kid to buy into your dreams.
He can be as successful as he wants to be.
To get recruited by a D1 school, the scholarship is the goal.
The covenant that I'm making with God is
oh, this
that
lady was
number
a creep.
One in the world in tennis.
Well, I didn't have a dad growing up. Once I saw my son born, I'm never not going to be there.
Pull your head out of your ass, dude. Seriously.
Can you be any stupider? How
He's talking about his own kid.
I'm gonna smack you in your mouth.
I want to be rewarded somehow, some way.
What if I didn't do everything I could to help them realize their dreams?
That's
amazing.
Isn't that frightening, dude? Like, those people are parents, and they're responsible for these children. And they're just turning them into, you see the kids crying in the documentary. And I know here's what I struggle with documentaries, because you only hear one side of the story there. And you can edit film and audio to make it sound worse than it really is. But I don't think that's the case with this. I mean, you shouldn't be saying any of these things. I want to be rewarded for my work that I'm
slapping you in the mouth, you know. I want to be rewarded. It just goes to show that they're living for themselves, you know. And I don't know. Maybe they had aspirations when they were kids and they couldn't live up to being, you know, what it is they wanted to be. And they're forcing these things onto the kids, you know. And it's bad because it's a game. It's a game. No matter whether you're playing basketball, tennis, whatever it is, it's a game first to these kids. They really don't know competition until the adults introduce competition. It's a game. And when you take the joy out of the game, then it becomes just another thing that this kid has to do, you know, and it's too much pressure. It's too much pressure.
Yeah, for that age. I remember, I mean, I played football briefly in high school, but we were remodeling our house. We had one wall standing. And I would have to – I didn't realize how much time. We would get out of school at 2:20. I'd get home at 6:30, 7 o'clock after practice. Some of these kids were working a job too. I would have to go home and then help out on the house. I couldn't do – it was way too much, man. And like I said, I was fat and I couldn't really hang. So.
Yeah. In my neighborhood growing up, though, basketball was everywhere. Like growing up in New York City, that was like basketball was everything.
Right.
So it was everywhere, and it was prevalent in all of the neighborhoods, and it was how we were able to make a name for ourselves. But then we also had visions of getting out of that environment, and we knew that you could get a basketball scholarship, which would catapult you into some type of I don't want to say stardom, but kind of put you above the people who weren't doing something, you know, so it make you stand out a little bit. You get some notoriety and possibly go to school. And, you know, those were the things that people were looking up to. And, you know, we played basketball not to get scholarships, really. We played for the love of the game because that's just what we did.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was always a game first. It didn't start becoming a job until I tried to force myself to try to make money from it.
So this is the double-edged sword and the cruelty of life in anything, not only with sports, but even this. I love doing this.
Yeah.
But now I'm on the clock. I have a deadline that I have to meet every week to make sure I get an episode done to submit.
Yeah.
Now, if I don't do it, the good thing about not getting paid is that, oh, well, I didn't get it done. And they can't really say anything to me. But I want to do it because this is my internship. This is me showing that I can do this. So to me, it's not currency, but it's like emotional currency for yourself.
Yeah.
Consistency, being consistent, putting out an episode every week. You say you're going to do something, you do it. But it's work now.
Yeah.
And it used to be just me and my old roommate bullshitting with each other. And then it kind of turned into, how this started was, it was me and my roommate bullshitting with each other. And I started just with the phone, and then we kind of talk back and forth on the phone. So then he had a baby and he had to leave. So I was like, well, I guess that's the end of that. We're done here, I guess. But I really enjoyed it, you know, because I had this awakening of I graduated college. Shit, what the hell am I going to do now?
Yeah.
And, you know, I had to really think back of, I remember as a kid, I used to play DJ on my boombox. I'd play songs and then announce the songs and stuff like that. So that's always been really fun for me. So then I started to get into the podcasting. So he left well, I guess that's the end of that. And that's when I started having guests in. And it's been building ever since then. So I love doing it, but it's hard because it's work, and it's work you're not getting paid for. So that's even worse.
Yeah, you know what? But your reward may be this pot of gold that comes
later the work. Yeah,
correct. Because you're still loving, you're doing something you love, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, as I say,
it's definitely building my economic libido. It's making me be an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And because I don't really want to work for anybody.
Yeah.
Ideally, I'd love to just work for myself.
Yeah.
Working for other people sucks.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, luckily, like, I am in a spot, but job now. I love where I work. I love Dennis and William. They're great guys. But if I could, I would definitely rather prefer to work for myself and be doing something like this that's fun, that I enjoy.
Right.
I mean, that's the goal, right? I mean, you know, to be a Howard Stern or something like that, making all this money doing it. Ideally, that would be great. Realistically, I think radio guys only make like $45,000 a year. It's not crazy money, but it's just, it's fun.
Yeah.
And it's easy, man. You talk for 2 hours a day and then you go home.
Well, but see, here's the thing. That's the key word. You said it's easy. A lot of people, like, to me, this is not easy. Well, doing it every week, like having to do something every week. Like, I, you know, coming in here talking with you and, you know, talking about the book, talking about, you know, I like that we can have a conversation and I'm getting used to it. But if I had to do it, like if I was sitting where you were and had to do the interview and everything, I'd probably be like, you know what I mean? So
yes, that is a fear of mine, that because I don't really like to talk.
Really?
I'm pretty introverted, really, on a lot of things. I like this medium because you kind of get to perform, but you have the safety of no one's able to see it.
Right.
So you can kind of say crazy shit, you know, and you don't have that criticism, direct criticism coming right back at you. Like if you were doing stand up or something like that, I've done that a few times. I run the open mic at Sly Bar, doing that. I like comedy and everything, but also I don't have the passion for it. I'd much prefer the safety of my apartment. You know?
And you know, I think we talked about that last time that I interviewed, that I'm kind of the same way, right? So I don't like to be put out on what I call Front Street.
Mm-hmm.
So writing for me, right? So people say, oh, well, you know, you have a great personality and you should be in front of the camera and all of that stuff. And I'm thinking, no, I like my privacy too much. And I like to be able to just do me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to have to perform. I don't want to have to, you know, I just want to be able to live my life and create. I want to be able to, and I didn't even know that I like to create because, you know, it's just something that's just come about in the last couple of years, right? That it's like, wow, I could sit here and all of these things that run through my mind and all of these funny characters that I come up with, if I put them on paper, somebody else may like it too.
Right.
Right. So, you know, some people from school, you know, reached out and so I'm at that age now where, you know, I got different groups of folks that I can go back to. Right. So I got my college folks, my high school folks, people from the neighborhood, you know, and the one common thread was, man, I used to like when you used to tell those stories. And I'm thinking, really? Like, what stories? I don't remember what stories I used to tell. You know, they was like, oh, you were so entertaining. And I'm thinking, really?
Didn't even know it.
So now to be able to take that and write a story and I'm like, people are like, how do you come up with that? You know, how did you put it that way? And I'm like, that's like, it's really, I don't want to sound cocky or anything
natural,
like that.
Though.
Yeah, it just comes out. That's how I am. That's how I've always done it. You know, before I even knew that I could write or have a writing talent, you know, that's how I used to play. When I wasn't having to be Mr. Macho in front of my friends and be eaten by the vultures, that's how I used to play.
Mm-hmm.
Pick up a pen and go to this other world and play in this other world. And when I was ready to come out of it, drop the pen, close the sheets of paper and come back to quote unquote, what was my reality. So, it's interesting. But again, never thought about it as making money from it. Never thought about it as a skill. But there's people who do that stuff who makes millions of dollars.
Absolutely.
And I'm thinking, what? Really?
Yep.
So, you know, when someone said to me, oh, well, you know, if you get your stuff out there to the masses and they like it, it can make a living for you. And I'm like, really?
Mm-hmm.
My stuff? But yeah.
Yeah, so you got to be able to take that risk. And I feel like I know it's not talent because people are, I know so many talented people, man. Living down here, musicians, artists, some of the best things I've ever seen have been down here. Talent is a big one. The time, the work that you put into it is the other. And then the third aspect, I think, is luck. People discount luck. They say hard work will get you there. It will. It's part of the equation, but the third part is out of your control, yeah. And that's just the luck factor.
Yeah. But, you know, luck does play. I agree with you there because, you know, what's amazing to me is, that, you know, you come across some great artist work in any medium, and you're like, well, God, this thing is amazing. Like, how does this not get out to everybody,
mm-hmm.
you know? And you look at him, you're like, you did that? You came up with that? He's like, yeah. And it's like, you should be a billionaire, you know? But he just, his stuff or her stuff doesn't reach the masses to be able to, you know, to be able to make a living from people experiencing that, you know, that art form.
I think a lot of it, too, is it's half luck, half work, is networking and meeting people. It kind of sucks because you have to, everybody you meet could potentially help you, mm-hmm. but it also makes you be a better person because you have to be nice to everybody, even if you don't want to be. So it kind of makes you that, because they could help you in the future. You don't want to alienate anybody you know, be an asshole to somebody.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, it turns out that he's a publisher at, you know, some huge, and you're like, fuck.
Yeah. You know, what's challenging, in that aspect is, because if you are an introverted type person, right, how do you brag on yourself? How do you say, hey, I have this amazing work here, you know, take a look at my stuff without being overbearing and people like, oh, heck, I'm that guy again. Oh, geez, you know. And so you're like, I don't want to be that guy, but I need to be that guy.
Right. Well, you got to balance.
Yeah,
you have to find that balance because you have to be confident in your work. You can't be arrogant, though.
Right.
And there is a very fine line between the two.
Yes.
So I'm a self-deprecator. I like to shit on myself. That also gives me the opportunity what are you going to say to me I don't say to myself? So it's kind of a defense mechanism, too. But I know, like, for this, I really haven't gotten – I'm waiting for someone to trash me for this. I'd be like, you suck at this. Everybody's been really nice to me.
Yeah.
I haven't had, I don't know, I mean, maybe, I'm sure people shit on it in their own private time, but also I understand that I know I'm not good at this. I'm getting better, but it takes, I think it's 10,000 hours of doing something to become a master at it and get really good at it. I have about 100 episodes, so I need, 9,800 more episodes before I get good at it.
No, I think you do an amazing job. Honestly, because I, like I said, if I was sitting on your side and I had to give an interview over and over again, you know, I mean, I guess eventually if that was my passion, you know, I would put the time in to get good at it. But I'd be like, okay, what do I ask this guy without being.
It's a struggle. It is. I've had some brutal interviews, man.
Yeah.
Like things that you wouldn't expect either. I remember I had this one chick in and she was like, worked on TV shows. She's a comic out in LA. It was pulling teeth.
Wow.
So she was good, but she would answer every question I had. But you have to have an interaction. So it's not really, and this is my thing, it's not an interview. It is a conversation.
Okay, yeah.
And I want to get to know who you are as a person. I mean, we've done one before, but I haven't seen you in a year.
Right.
You know, so I don't know you super well.
Right.
So there's why, it's not only what you're doing, but why you're doing it, who you are as a person. That's my motto. It's also kind of a cop out because that way I don't have to sit there and prepare. So I know, most of these people, the right way to do it is you have to go and read and come up with things to ask.
To ask, yeah.
So, I just do it a little different.
Yeah.
I don't edit. So my way is the lazy way, but I feel like it's still effective in its own way.
Yeah, it's a niche.
Right.
It's a nice niche because you get to have, like you said, a real like you have a real conversation, right? So there's no prepared, hey, these are the questions I'm going to ask you. It's like, okay, let's talk as if we were standing on a street corner and we're just really shooting the shit, you know? And I actually personally like to listen to those interviews because I think that the person on the other side, you'll start to, they will reveal more because the questions or the dialogue that's happening is so natural that, you know, they would, the guard comes down. Mm-hmm. And you get to see the person as opposed to, you know, the form that's on the other side of the mic. So,
and that's the goal with what I'm trying to do. Like I said, there has to be a reason why you wrote this book. For using you as an example. So, and then we found out you, with your experience with this stuff, people won't really, if you go just do a book, you know, interview, they're just going to ask you questions about the book and that's really it.
Yeah.
So I feel like there's always more to the story about people. I like people. I don't know. I mean, it's just, they're interesting. They're we're social animals, you know, it's weird. So it's, and like I said, I know, being in this town, how talented people are, it blows my mind. And it's, you feel like you should be rich, man. What's going on?
Yeah. Being like where we live, and you're in it more than I am, but I feel that's one of my shortcomings. Like I need to be around that artistic community. I think it would bring out so much more in me, because there's still some things that I struggle with sharing and, you know, wanting to get more into, but I just need to get within a group of folks who think like I think, who can say, look, dude, let go of those anxieties and just be who you're going to be and then put it out there and be free. Because once you've come out of the, you know, I hate to use come out of the closet, but once you expose yourself and say, okay, this is who I really am and this is how I, you know, this is how I feel about things, and I'm just going to be me. Like, so many people are doing that now, and you just see, you hear story after story after story where they're like, I was scared to share, and I was scared to kind of say who I really wanted to be. But in doing so, one person has the nerve to do that, and all of a sudden, here comes the horde of people that says, oh, my God, you know, you affected me in this kind of way because you gave me the strength to say it's okay to be who I'm going to be, And I think that's amazing, man. That's the one thing that gets lost a lot, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And those are real empowering things because I think the world as a whole is hurting.
Oh, definitely.
The world as a whole is hurting, man. And so, any guidance or role model that anybody could look to, because now it's not just the kids, it's parents too. It's these parents are now, they're really kids. Who've never come out of the shell, you know, and it's like, you know, you hear, a 50-year-old, 60-year-old man saying, wow, I've been free. You're like, well, what have you been doing for the past 60 years, you know? But they've been living in this closet and living half a life, man. I always said I didn't want to do that. But,
Yeah, you have to, I think the big thing with that is I try to be as open and honest as possible. And it's gotten me in trouble in certain occasions with people. But, my thing is, I just want to be fair.
Yeah.
And I acknowledge that there are parts of myself that I need to work on. And even acknowledging that is, so you know you're not perfect. I mean, everybody's got their things, you know? So just by announcing that, that is putting yourself on blast. It is exposing yourself as what you really are. And that's a really scary thing. And a lot of people don't want to face those things that are wrong with them. But you're not going to fix them that way. You don't have the opportunity. You're not even giving yourself the opportunity to become a better person.
Yeah. That's interesting you said that because, you know, when you say what's wrong with us, how do we know it's really wrong? You know what I'm saying?
True.
Because it is just a perspective. You know, again, I don't think as long as you're not hurting anybody, then, you know, I'm okay. Whether I agree, disagree, whatever, that's what makes us all unique, you know. Mm-hmm. And they do say everybody has a unique talent at something. Do I believe that? It remains to be seen because so many things never come to light, you know. But I think that everybody has something that they do something that they feel, something that they could do, something that they're hiding, that if they get the courage to share, it may not be the thing, but it may be the spark to the thing that leads to this huge thing that, right, you know, sparks the world. So, you know, and I get that from, I heard Tupac say that one time. He said, I may not be the thing, but I may spark the mind of somebody who trips the light on the thing that inspires the world.
Sure.
And I was like, wow, that's huge.
That's being brave and taking a stance and opening yourself to criticism. Yeah. Being aware that people are going to not be nice to you. The good thing about the internet and the bad thing about the internet. So now I'm able to, I wanted to do radio. Now I can in this new aspect of whatever this media is becoming. But now everybody else can as well. So how do you get found? How do you even do it? So it provides you with the tool, but also now you're lost in this sea. You got thrown out into the ocean, yeah, and you got to figure out a way to make it happen.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, it again, I think it just comes, you know, same thing with the book. Like, the people who've read the books are like, it's amazing. I love it. And you're like, okay, so we got to start there. But how do I get my book through, the 10 million, 50 million, 100 million other books that's out there? Like, how do I get someone to read my book? And so, you know, and it becomes a challenge because I'm not this marketing guru. I don't have access to the machine. You know what I mean? So, you just gotta hope that someone reads it that is in a position to say, well, I'm plugged into the machine, or
right,
I want to do this, or this is the idea that I have.
This is the luck.
Know? Yeah, that's the luck. The luck. You're right. The luck you were talking about. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. So,
I'm learning how to market this thing, and I've only been doing this for a couple years, and I'm finding some success in it. Doing other aspects, hosting events, and like the open mic's kicking ass. It won a Best of the Bay award this past year. So I saw a need. So I guess what I'm saying is you have to find something and incorporate something else. So then that will in turn pull this thing up. So like the open mic gives me an opportunity to promote the podcast. Right. And I get more listeners that way. People who may not, they're just here to see comedy, but then they're like, oh, this guy has a podcast. I'll check that out.
Yeah.
So that's how it's been kind of growing too, I think. So yeah, I mean, open mic's kicking ass. We had 30 comics come out last week.
Wow.
It's way too many.
Wow.
Way too many. But so I saw a need there that we had art, we had music. There's no comedy scene really here at all. I only knew of one other open mic that was in the area. So I saw that need and filled it. And now it's helping the other thing.
Well, that's good. So that's good.
So getting out in front of people, and then you got to build your web. Don't do the telescopic thing where you're looking, I'm going to go to New York, or I'm going to try to push my book in New York. Push it here.
Yeah.
You start the web here. And then so the word of mouth is always going to be your best advertising.
Yeah.
Just people, you know, share the book, you know, give it. They'll read it. They'll give it to a friend.
Yeah.
And then maybe like, oh, I like this guy. I'm going to check out this other book that he's got.
Yeah.
So that's how you build that web and the connectivity of everything.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, that's the plan, to start doing some local stuff, you know, as much as I can. You know, the funny thing is you get people, unfortunately, you get people who say, well, I don't read. He's like,
Yeah, that's very
but,
sad.
You know, but then it's, they don't read, but they will listen to an audiobook.
Right.
Or they will watch it on film or on YouTube or something like that. So, you know, like going back to the Bogeyman book, you know, a friend of mine who is actually in some type of marketing PR firm, she says, well, why don't you shoot a scene with your phone? That way it's authentic. Put it out there on YouTube. Shoot that little scene and then put the title to the book. This is what, you know, to kind of draw interest to it. And I was like, maybe I could do that. You know, maybe I can do that, you know. Because it wouldn't take a lot. I mean, you talk a bogeyman, you're talking about just the, you know, being at a golf course, right? The funny scene I wanted to shoot was the part where, you know, the guys roll up to the golf course. They look crazy as hell. They're not supposed to be there. And, you know, you got this guy who, my character, who is trying to just blend in, but he's dressed like Richie Cunningham and and Ice Cube, you know, put together, about to go play golf. And he's got these dusty clubs, and all he wants to do is just get through the day. And then, you know, so you got all the people lined up to start the shotgun start, so all the carts and everything is lined up. Everybody's in line to wait for the gun to go off, and the gun goes off, and they all start scrambling to go to the holes. And the cart that I'm in, you know, everybody has nice golf clubs and everything, and I have this duffel bag with these beat up clubs in it that I rented from someone. And when I pull my cart off, you know, I'm praying for it to go nice, and then all of a sudden the bag slides off the back, and all of the clubs, you know, fall off into the floor. And so, you know, it's a funny scene. It's a funny scene, but to be able to shoot that and, you know, have someone look at it and say, okay, you know, that's kind of funny, you know? Mm-hmm. So, okay. So that's what the book is about, you know, cause most people are like, oh, it's a golf book. It's about golf. No, it really wasn't about golf. It's about some funny friendships. It just so happens that we were on a golf course, but it's a friendship book. It's a comedy. I liken it to the, Hangover meets, yeah, I don't know, Happy Gilmore, mm-hmm, you know, type mm-hmm. thing. So, that was it.
All right, man, let's get out of here. I gotta take a shower and go to bed. Eileen, give out your social media again, website, all that stuff.
Yeah, my website, www.eileecoleman.com. That's IleeColeman.com. My Twitter is at IleeColeman.com. I'm actually on Instagram now.
I've gotten myself
on Instagram.
A man of the new age.
I know. I am the real Eileen Coleman. So real Eileen Coleman. I don't think I put the on it. It's just
don't
real
follow
Eileen
the fake Eileen Colemans on Instagram.
So it's real Eileen Coleman. And that's it.
Holy shit, man. That was 57 minutes.
Was it?
Yeah.
Wow.
This is what I'm saying. You were the catalyst of this HMB Sides thing, because we did the first one. We talked for like an hour afterwards, and I wish I was recording it. These are so much better. You don't have to worry about cursing. You can curse if you want to. You're not a cusser. I enjoy it. It's fun. But this is where you can kind of get to the nitty-gritty of everything.
Yeah.
But anyways, my Facebook, HMB Radio on Facebook, hmbradio.com. Twitter, home_made_man. Same thing on Instagram. I'm going to follow Eileen on Instagram right now. Thanks for coming in, man. It was fun.
Yeah, appreciate you having me.
When book 3 comes out, you have to come back.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
All right, man.
Thanks.
This is a Homemade Broadcast Radio production.
Check out more free content at hmbradio.com, including the Dallas Cowboys podcast and my mom's favorite podcast with James Bailey. hmbradio.com.